It's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. Universal Soldiers getting so hot, they gotta take their clothes off. Do you get it? It's because they get hot.
Oh, I genuinely didn't get it. I was absolutely baffled.
Hi, welcome to the Bitter End Podcast.
Hi, with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
I'm going to move my chair a little further away from you, if that's all right, Tom.
It's going to be one of those days.
Thanks for joining us, listeners. Gotta tell you, both Tom and I are at the end of our tether. We are tired, we are frazzled, we are mentally exhausted. So what better to do than sit down and record for you our deepest personal thoughts and thinkage about Universal Soldier 5 Regeneration?
Yeah, from 2009.
2009, God.
Yeah, getting modern. It's creeping up on us.
Well, at the same time, that just sounds like a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, we've watched the trailer. Does it look like it came from a long time ago?
Fuck me, yes, it does. It looks like a Harrison Ford, like, early 90s, like, courtroom drama or something. Not what they're doing, just the way it looks.
Yeah, it had a very budget, the trailer we saw, like, I think there's a few different versions, had a very budget, in a world, kind of guy. It's more like, in a world, some Universal Soldiers, we're doing this dance again. Now, what is important about this film, it's actually canonical.
What?
Yeah, we finally, film five, we've got what is considered by the people that hold the purse strings of Universal Soldier to be a direct sequel to the first film. It only took three misses for us to get here.
I don't know if I can make it back in the inside of the canon, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm like that old guy from the end of Shawshank Redemption who gets out and can't make it in the outside world.
I know, because you're just walking around going like, but where's the giant sentient light bulb? Where's Boo Boo Boosie? Where's Burt Reynolds?
We've got bloody Dolph back, right?
Okay, big times here, people. Dolph Lundgren, they've just brought him back. They're like, what happened to him in the last film? Combine Harvester? Nah, we'll bring him back.
I'm so excited to hear how they talk about that.
I think your cloning theory will be correct.
I mean, it's the only logical solution.
Unless just Dolph Lundgren is too tough and gorgeous to die, that he just kind of like reassembled himself like the T-1000.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
So a few other interesting points about the trailer. It seems to be set predominantly in Russia. The trailer guy's like, someone's trying to blow up Chernobyl. I'm didn't that already happen?
Yeah.
Like, one of the only things I know about Chernobyl.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of running around Russia. The baddies seem to be mainly Russian guys. And when the dude's like running down the big name stars in there, he's like, Dolph Lundgren, JCVD, and Andre the Pitbull Arlovsky.
That is a good name.
Who is Andre the Pitbull Arlovsky?
I imagine he's like a bouncer at a nightclub. That's what he sounds like.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's like a mixed martial arts guy. That would be my guess. Who knows?
The text on the screen didn't say Pitbull. It just said like his actual name.
Okay.
But the voiceover guy was like, I know this guy.
I'm
going to
drop a little Pitbull in there,
yeah,
see
I
if
hope
that sticks.
That was like an improv on his part.
Yeah, yeah. So Chernobyl, people want to blow up Chernobyl again. They have the perfect soldier. The people who are trying to blow it up have the perfect soldier. Apparently, that's a Universal Soldier.
I think it's Andre the Pitbull Arlovsky, right?
Yes, but they're saying the perfect soldier is a Universal Soldier.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Because I think he is a Universal Soldier, and I don't know. I mean, I know that the other films weren't considered canon, but it has not proven to be a perfect system so far.
Yeah.
But the big thing that's in the trailer is like, okay, so whoever's trying to blow it up, they've got the Pitbull, they've got Universal Soldiers, and they're going to bring back Luke Davro, JCVD, who's dead.
So when did he die? Like, in the canon of this, he didn't die, right?
Because in the last film,
Which is non-canon,
but was the second film with JCVD in it, he was just living his life. He was still alive. So I think that's why that doesn't count, but he was alive at the end of the first one.
Yeah, they're going to have to start with like a some sort of terrible kayak accident or something where he accidentally gets his kayak paddle stuck in his forehead and
Eskimo
rolls underground, and then like a big seal is attracted to the blood and starts doing that thing that sharks do where they like roll you around and around and around and around and around until you pass out. And then what's going to happen is like an oil tanker is going to like come along and just like plow straight through them while he's rolling, and the plowing of that in the engines is going to create a whirlpool and he's going to drown.
Okay, this is going to be a heavy opening 5 minutes to this film.
If I ruled the world, Tom.
Yeah. Well, actually, the thing is, at the end of the first Universal Soldier, there is he's won, he's saved the day, but there is no there's nothing in there to be kind of like you're still that guy that might overheat and die. So he might have just overheated and died.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Because like maybe the first film was like set in November. Or something.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
like he lived his life up until July.
Yeah.
And then immediately died.
Especially in Cajun country. He's gonna get muggy as fuck. He's like, what happened? Oh, he died of mugginess. Whoa, we cracked a window, but it was just no good. He just
got in one of those little handheld fans.
Yeah, like instead of like getting in a bath of ice, he just gets in a bath full of those little handheld fans.
That's probably what killed him.
Killed Dolph Lundgren, didn't it? So I'm very excited to see what is considered canon. I'm excited to see Dolph back again. So we should watch this film, but there's one little thing we got to do. You know it. I know it. It's the IMDb guessing game.
It's my favorite game, baby.
Yeah. So Todd, returning to the fold, Universal Soldier Regeneration 2009. What are you feeling?
Feeling a lot of pressure is what I'm feeling, Tom. What was the last score?
I think it was a 4.
Okay. 4 on the nose.
I think it was 4 on the nose.
Which was up from
3.2.
Okay.
So it went 6, 3, 3.2, and then I think 4.
Okay. Your attention to detail is an inspiration to us all.
I think. Sorry.
I'm going to go... high,
like
not that high, like, but like higher.
You know.
4.2.
Mate, tell you what, stick another full digit on that. 5.2.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I am genuinely shocked.
It's been a roller coaster ride, this franchise. It's like, this is like, that is a significant upturn, isn't it?
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of this other than let's take a bite.
Arr, was that a pit bull gag?
No, I just was just I'm really tired.
Yeah. Could have been a pit bull gag. I shouldn't have pointed it out.
No.
Anyway, let's watch the film.
Bye! You all right, Tom?
Yeah, I've regenerated.
Cool.
Like the film, Regeneration.
Yeah.
I've regenerated as a much... darker, more serious, more violent, more blue filter version of myself.
So does that mean that for the rest of this podcast, you're going to be swearing a lot?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be sad?
Yeah.
You're going to be... Is this edgy,
I'm
Tom?
I'm going to be sad, sweary, and violent. Not all of that is really going to communicate very well on a podcast, apart from the swearing.
Wow.
You shit.
Oh my God, that was so rude.
My God. So we've watched Universal Soldier Regeneration and, it's a different tone of film.
It is. Now, look, guys, it's not a bad film by any stretch. It's certainly better than either of the two
Burt
Reynolds moustache era ones. I do think it's better than... The Return, the last movie we watched.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so like a polar opposite in terms of an action, because that's just silly. And this one is very serious.
It's just really divorced from the original film by like multiple removes. It's so bleak. It's set in Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And it's about like these rebel...
Okay, now let's just quickly address the fact that it is set... in like Chernobyl, and a lot of the people in this film are speaking Russian, and it's all subtitled. It's a made-for-DVD film, and we have seen other made-for-DVD like installments of big intellectual properties. Quite specifically, Hellraiser. Me and Todd have watched a few Hellraiser films, and a bunch of those are filmed in like Eastern Europe on a budget. And watching this is like, it's in Chernobyl because it's cheap. They can film it in the Ukraine or wherever and just be like, oh yeah, it's like we meant to do this all along, not just because like budgetary, because it looks good. I think for a film like that is, so The Return had a budget of $45 million.
What's the budget of this one, Tom?
Nine mil. And the action scenes in this, I think, look a lot better than they do in, like, they're I think because they haven't got all that money, and it's a lot more choreographed fight scenes. There's a lot more hand-to-hand combat, a bit more knife play. It just seemed like they just filmed everything from every angle in the last film and cut something together. And in this one, it seems a little bit more constructed. They've had to think.
Now, hold up here, you shit.
Yeah.
Because I'm sweary too now.
Okay, twat bag.
Yeah, your big pile of balls. those numbers don't add up to me, right? Yeah. I call bullshit on your tit-headed shenanigans.
Listen here, you muffin. I got those. I got those stats from the Wikipedia. And so it could be absolute bullshit.
I'm just saying here that it was 45 mil for the last one, which just had JCVD and Romeo. This one, 9 mil, JCVD.
And Dolph.
And Dolph.
But the other...
And it only cost 9.
But think about, like, The Return. That was Jean-Claude Van Damme's last cinematic, like, Hollywood release.
Oh, so this one's straight,
mate. I think that his, sort of, like, his Hollywood cachet has gone down. Because I think that this film might have had cinematic releases, but not in America. It might have had like a few, like a small release in some areas in Europe or Asia, but like The Return was JCVD's last, I think, like big, like at the movies outing until he played the bad guy in The Expendables 2. And the same goes, like you know, like Dolph hadn't been, but so, and you don't get a lot of JCVD or Dolph in this film.
Oh my God. No, yes. They're kept very separate in like a byline that runs like concurrently to everything that's going on.
There's about like 80 minutes of this film that's going on in one area with all these other actors. And then every now and then there's about like 10 minutes worth of Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren.
So we need to get into...
Let's get in.
What the hell this movie is about. So open in a museum.
Yep. In Russia.
Somewhere in Russia. We assume Moscow, but they don't actually say.
It's a big place.
It's a big place. We're in a museum and there is a teenage girl walking around looking at art going,
And her brother, apparently. Oh, that's all. Good art. And then 10 minutes worth of gunfire ensues.
10 minutes of gunfire, and they're like, oh shit, get out of the museum, get out of the museum. They run, they get out of the museum.
She gets kidnapped. The kids get thrown in a car.
But during this bit, there's like this bodyguard guy, because maybe these kids are important. There's this bodyguard guy trying to protect them, And he runs out and he's like, I'm going to clear the street. Run across, run to me. And this car, this is the best stunt in the whole film. This car just like barrels down.
Oh, yeah.
Slams into him and he flies in the air. I cannot think how they did this stunt without just driving a car into a man.
That is why you go and film somewhere in Eastern Europe. I know. That's why they got, you know, they made this film for cheap because people are doing dumb shit for cheap, apparently. Because, yeah, like there's some big fights, there's some big sort of like action shit going on in this, but it's not like that, like kind of like silly Hollywood running down a hallway chased by an explosion. It's really like bone crunching, stabby stab. Like there's so many bits in this film where people get pinned to the ground and whoever is pinning that person to the ground then punches them at least 50 times in the face. The director was really into that. There's like, we don't have any blanks for the gun, so we're just going to punch everyone to death.
Kablam, 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 kablam.
So we have this big car chase and it turns out that this kind of... some sort of separatist group in Russia has taken the Prime Minister of Russia's kids hostage.
They're the kids from the museum. They are looking for independence for Pasalan.
Don't know if it's real or not.
Hadn't heard of it until we watched this movie. Haven't looked it up whether or not it's real. Pasalan. Independence for Pasalan. If it's real, I'm going to say I'm for them.
Okay, cool. I mean, I don't really approve their methods in this because they kidnap the kids and then storm into Chernobyl and put a big bomb to the reactor, which apparently is still ticking with some seriously nuclear juice. And like, we're going to blow it up if you don't free like 100 plus prisoners and, you know, give independence to...
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're renegades.
They're renegades. They're doing what they want to do.
It's all right, Tom, because I've just looked up Pasalan, yeah. And from what I can tell, it is the name of a character from the video game Battle Cats.
Right, okay. So we don't have to worry about that guy being treated badly by the Russian government. So what are we going to do? That's the question. What are we going to do, yeah, about these guys who've, like, you know, put a bomb in Chernobyl and they've got the Prime Minister's kids? We're going to send in lots of Americans for some reason, right?
Yeah, that is weird that they're sending in Americans. Although, do you know why they're sending in Americans?
Why, Todd?
It's because the renegades have got one particular American super weapon.
What could that be?
Well, it is not just a universal soldier, not just a Unisol. Mm. It's part of that was, you know, they were created, as you know, but was never mentioned in any of the previous films. Mm. They were created as part of Operation Black Tower.
Yeah. So this is where we get like a little bit of Universal Soldier backstory that we never had.
Also not covered in any of the previous films, but as you know.
Black Tower.
Black Tower was followed by Operation White Tower.
Oh, nicely where named.
They used DNA therapy, gene therapy.
Like cloning tech.
To like clone versions of those Unisols that were without any of their defects. So they're more perfect. And these were called NGUs. Next Generation Universal Soldiers.
Yeah, next gen, baby. And you know who's a next gen? The Pitbull. Mr. Worldwide. That's right. Yeah.
He is a man with literally no nose on his face.
Oh, he's got a flat face.
No special effects, but just his face is a frying pan.
He looks very grumpy, and he's got a rad little stabber.
Oh, man, he's rad little stabber. I'm so into Pitbull's rad little stabber.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's basically got, like, a sword that, like, pops out of his arm, a bit like the character Baraka in Mortal Kombat.
Like, yeah, it's not actually physically inside the arm, it's like strapped to it.
Yeah, yeah, he's got this like little like stabber pouch, and it's just going cha-ching, and he goes doo, 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 and he gets people in the belly. And so the Americans send in a SWAT team of Marines, and they also send in, apparently the American government has 4 original recipe Universal Soldiers still on ice that they send in. So they unfreeze these guys and they put on their little eye thingies.
Yeah,
you've seen Universal Soldiers. They've got those little eye things. Do you know how they don't like just clip them on? They don't like put them around the ear. They're not Oakley shades like in The Return. No, they put them on their head and they bolt them into their skull with a fucking nail gun, and it makes them look like the Borg out of Star Trek. It's weird and gnarly. The only thing is I wish it looked better. Like, because saying that sounds pretty cool when I'm describing it.
It certainly does.
It doesn't look as cool as it does in the first film still.
Yeah, like, it just looks... It's the thickness of this leather strap that goes across their head. It just makes it look like a shitty hat.
Yeah, it's not great. Yeah, I mean, the fact it looks so much like the Borg, it's kind of like, oh, that's a little bit Comic-Con, isn't it? It's a little bit cosplay. It's a little bit Halloween. It's not, like, it's not legit. It's kind of... That's, I think, maybe where, like, in this lower-budget version, the budget really shows, like, oh, you can't make the Universal Soldiers look cool. That's a bit of a shame. Anyway, they go in and get fucking chopped up by Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide himself, just stabbing them all in the chest with his rad little stabber. They don't stand a fucking chance. And then he comes out and kills all of the soldiers, all the American soldiers apart from one, right? So the guy who gets away, I did not catch his name, but I call him Johnny Hothead. So he's like the one American soldier who's like, he's a bit of a renegade. He's not really into like these freaks, these unisols coming in and doing a real live-in soldier's job. He gets away, right? Yeah, cool. At which point... Can I just go back for something for a second?
Yeah.
You know
the
bit when they're talking about Black Tower and the origins of Universal Soldiers? Because this is a bit where I was like, oh, cool. We're going to get some more backstory into like what is actually going on with like the Unisol program, because those last three films don't actually count. So what have you got?
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah, and they're like, okay, well, it's that thing like, well, we're going to get some dead guys and make them like extra super gnarly. That's cool. But the way that they showed the Universal Soldier training, it's like a snuff film. Like they like... They got a soldier and put him in an electric chair, killed him, brought him back from the dead, waterboarded him. What else did they? They did some other like really
hey,
fucked
you
up.
Named
oh
it,
no,
they got it.
They got like a scalding hot, like they got like an ice pick, put it on a fire so it was red hot, and burned it into his stomach. And it's kind of like, is this testing anything now? Are you just being like fucking malicious bastards?
Maybe Tool needed to make a video around the same time.
And... It all comes back to Tool videos, doesn't it, buddy? yeah. Oh, so that was... And that was one of these bits. Like, fuck, man, the tone in this film, it's so much more gnarly. It's got that... We're not worried about a cinema-going audience and their tastes. Like, they resign themselves about like anyone who wants to go and watch the new Universal Soldier on DVD, they don't care. They're just gonna get what they're given, and so we're gonna give them this fucking bleak, harrowing, really like viscerally, like kind of bone crunchingly violent take on it, where like we've got like waterboarding and burning and rad little stabbers. Like, yeah, like, oh, you want the eyepiece? Yeah, I'll give you the eyepiece. I'll fucking nail it into your face.
Yeah, they do a really weird job of glossing over that the quite patriotic vibe of the last few films, which have all been about kind of fighting against bad people in the US government and trying to kind of overcome that corruption and you know, this kind of, say what you will about, you know, I'm not the biggest Shooty Man movie fan, but like I think that overall, Universal Soldier 1 is kind of an anti-war film, probably. Boils down to being an anti-war film. Like those opening scenes in Vietnam with all the brutality and Dolph with his like ear necklace and stuff.
Yeah, like the opening of the first one is very harrowing. This is just kind of like really dour.
But there's also...
And it's not, like, it's not bad. It's like, because we commented on this a lot when we were watching it, like, thinking, like, why are they shooting this, like, a horror film?
Yes.
And it is, like, a straight-to-DVD horror film.
The soundtrack and everything.
Yeah. It's like, much more, like, sort of, like, foreboding in
and
that way.
And I think that's the big difference here, is that these ones, they're full of, like, some really brutal imagery, but it's not presented in the same way that in the earlier films, where it's, like, war is hell. Damn it. This is just like, it's shown as being like, right, you want to see this guy get his head smashed in? Yeah, you want to? All right, here we go. Bam!
Well, this one's like, war is hell, but you know what war is? It's one man pinning another man to the floor and punching him in the face until his skull doesn't exist. It's rough.
And there's no, yeah, there's no like, this isn't a criticism, because like I love horror films and a lot of them are just people getting killed over and over again. It's just a fact, I think, of this film. There's no like point to any of these kills.
Yeah, well,
they happen because they need something to fill the writer. And I'm into that. Mm-hmm. They've done it like a slasher. It's a slasher.
Oh yeah, like the next gen Universal Soldier is like he's like a Jason Voorhees, especially because he's got this big fucking knife attached to him, and he is unstoppable in the scene, and it's quite cool, like watching, like he's like leaping like several floors down in this like abandoned power station, landing on people and like cutting them up, and it's gnarly.
It's just different. That's
it
all.
It is different, and we will get to the point. What is the point of this film a bit later on? But like. So, why does this like little Russian group have a next-gen Unisol? It's because they've got Dr. Colin.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so the evil scientist who's gone rogue from Project White Tower is called Dr. Colin.
Dun, dun, dun.
Like, oh, that's a bad name for an evil guy, isn't it?
I think it's quite scary. Just say it aloud now.
Dr. Colin?
Dun, dun, dun.
Chills. Anyway, so he is just being a dick. Like, he's being an evil scientist dick to, like, this Russian terrorist guy, as you would. He's trying to undermine him at every opportunity he gets, despite the fact this Russian terrorist could snap him like a twig. And there's, like, this safety measure that all the baddies, all the terrorists, have been microchipped with a special thing that means that the next-gen Universal Soldier won't kill them. So this is, like, to stop Dr. Colin
dun, 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 dun,
going rogue and trying to kill off the Ruskies and take it all for himself.
Good plan.
But...
oh, no, there's a flaw in the plan.
There's a flaw in the plan. They didn't check what was in that really, really, really big bag that Dr. Colin had.
Dun, dun, dun. What's in the big bag?
Well, it's a very big bag. And it's a bag that's so big it could only hold one very big thing. And that very big thing is Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, I do believe I'm getting the vapors.
Yep, so... it's about this time that we get introduced to the fact that, like, there is a clone of Dolph Lundgren in that bag. It's about this point. We're so far through the fucking podcast now. Jean-Claude Van Damme's in this film as well. Not a lot. Not a fucking lot.
We'll have a sideline of everything that Jean-Claude Van Damme does. Yeah. We'll just run through his whole experience of the movie. But let's do Dolph a little bit, shall we?
Yeah, let's do Big Dolphy.
So he's been away a while. And he's changed. He's not that fresh-faced boy that I fell in love with in Universal Soldier 1. But he's always still got a little something.
He's definitely... he's still, like, hands down, a far better actor than Jean-Claude Van Damme. Just watching him do something, like, yeah, Dolph, yeah, you fucking smash that.
I have my little leather notebook here that I scribble in while we watch these films. Mm. And at the exact point that Dolph came out of the big bag owned by Dr. Colin, dun, 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 the note I wrote down is, ooh, Dolph's big, innie.
He is massive. And he's a more sympathetic character in this film. Because Dr. Colin has this whole thing where when they're checking, like, you know, if a Universal Soldier isn't going wrong, as they always do, he asks them the kind of questions that you get asked when someone's trying to indoctrinate you into Scientology.
Yes!
It's very much like that.
Yeah, they're questions like, do you think of yourself as a reliable person? Do you ever ask questions about the world around you?
Yeah, so...
it's supposed to be, I think it is, what's that? There's that potentially apocryphal story about Def Leppard, the band Def Leppard,
yeah,
insisting on only having no brown M&Ms in their rider. They wanted a bowl of M&Ms, no brown ones. And supposedly the story goes that if they found a single brown M&M, they wouldn't play the gig. Now, I know the true story behind that is that they were touring with this, like, really technical show with all these lights and pyrotechnics and things like that. And quite often people wouldn't read it properly. And then there would be accidents because it was really dangerous. And so they buried in it, in some small paragraph somewhere, this line about the brown M&Ms. So that if they turned up at a venue, they saw the bowl, if they saw a brown M&M in it, they know that meant they hadn't read the contract properly.
Right,
and they then knew to start going over all of the other proper safety stuff. So, sensible lads. I feel like this thing with all of these, like, weird Scientology questions, like, do you like to relax with the family on the weekends? I think it's just literally that they have a list of programmed answers that the Unisols are supposed to give. And that if they ever give one answer out of these, like, 50 questions wrong... they're like, well, this guy's not, he's not completely programmed the way exactly he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that they're programming them to want to spend time with the families on the weekend.
Because they don't have a family.
No, but they're programming them to always answer that question the same way.
Obviously, Dolph doesn't answer correctly. And then he's kind of like, oh, yeah, that thing, yeah. yes rather than no.
Wink to the camera, tap wink the nose, to the camera. You know, guys, whatever. Yeah. Little cheeky fooled them.
Who's expecting me to make a little necklace later? He doesn't make the necklace, unfortunately. But Dolph is a much more sympathetic character in this because he gets asked these questions by Dr. Colin about like what it is to be human or like about the sort of the nature of life and existence. And you get the impression that like he's like, well, I am the clone of a dead Vietnam, like a traumatized dead Vietnam soldier who was then reanimated and put into a combine harvester. I have issues, babe. He is struggling. So like he's not like the same character in the first one who's just like this really concerned with like traitors and you know, like he's not like this army man. He's like really dealing with that kind of like post-Nam shit of like being kind of like, what was all this about? Why are we doing this? Why am I back here? What is the point of this? And then, you know, like, and that's when you have the meeting between him and Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's just kind of like, he just seems like he doesn't even remember, like, really. Like, he's kind of like, I kind of know you.
But a clone shouldn't remember anything, right? Dolly the sheep, that sheep they cloned.
Yeah, well,
didn't have the same, I mean, there was sheep.
I don't know, did you ask her?
No, I know, but like.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we didn't.
He shouldn't remember anything. He shouldn't necessarily be traumatized, right?
I know, but.
But he is,
but we don't know.
And yet, here we are.
I think the thing is, like, obviously, we're dealing with cloning and reanimating dead soldiers. There's a little bit of wiggle room there for artistic license.
All right, I'll give you that.
Yeah, and it's a bit late in this series to be getting into Rules Corner, isn't it? it's a nice twist on Dolph's character. I kind of like Dolph is as sensitive as Dolph Lundgren can be when he's then going to fucking murder the shit out of everybody. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's Dolph. What he does, yeah, is he kills the Russian terrorist leader.
Yeah.
Because the government cave. They're like, give us the kids back. Don't blow up Chernobyl. We'll release the prisoners. So the Russian terrorist, like, yep, awesome. That's great. Now, because Dr. Colin, can't use the next gen Unisol to kill the Russian terrorist. He uses Dolph. So Dolph comes in, kills the Russian terrorist. Then Dolph kills Dr. Colin. Dun, dun, dun. And then Dolph is large and in charge, and he turns the time bomb back on for Chernobyl.
Just for shits and giggles.
We never really find out why. I think it's just because
some Dolph Lundgrens just want to watch the world burn.
This one in particular, I think. Yeah, he's just a bit. He's a bit frazzled.
He's done, mate. I know the feeling at the moment.
I know. We're both a bit frazzled. So that's Dolph.
Yeah.
What's JCVD been up to?
Well, I'm glad.
Because he actually is in this film. You have to really look, is in there.
They keep him completely separate. So when we first meet JCVD, big Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Big Luc Devereaux.
He is in the US of A. He's somewhere there and he's doing an ink blot test with his psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
She's showing him little ink blots and being like, you're right, mate. What's this one? And he looks at it and he goes,
don't know.
Escape. It makes me want to escape. And she goes, all right then, flips it over, another ink blot. She goes, what do you reckon that? And he goes, sadness. He goes, sadness. Hello. Makes me feel of sadness. Okay. Okay.
Okay. See you soon. Bye bye.
See you soon. Bye bye. She flips the next one. What do you reckon that one, mate? And he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Okay? Okay. And that is the end of that scene. And we get the impression that he's been doing this for a really long time. Because he has apparently aged 20 years since the last time we saw him. They have not been
crying. It has been nearly 20 years, though.
When was number 4?
Oh, actually. No, that one isn't canon.
It's not canon. But the man has physically aged.
No, it doesn't count. Okay, I'm forgetting how time works.
Can I just declare the last 10 years of my life non-canonical?
Only if you really make a real big shift in continuity.
Because I'm prepared to do it.
Okay.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. I'm 23 again. So then they go to a cafe.
Can I just say, like, the American government, when they said they had four Unisols, they were like, Johnny Hothead, the Marine, says, I thought they were fives. Like, no, we don't talk about Luke Davereau because he's the special one that we're trying to reintegrate into society. 20 years on, after the events of the first film, they are still not doing very well at reintegrating him to society because they go to this cafe and...
Well, me and Tom instantly get excited that we're going to get a repeat of the scene from the first film where a little callback where Luke Davereau has to learn how to eat.
There's none of that. Like, the return was full of little callbacks, none of that in this. They're like, hey, you love Universal Soldier? Well, we are not pandering to you, dickheads. This is like something completely different. This is like a fucking snuff movie.
They're sat there in the diner. His psychologist is there. And she's like, Do you have someone in your family, listeners, who's like relentlessly chipper and in a lovely way? And when everyone else is like bleak or there's like some elephant in the room that's going wrong, and they take it upon themselves to be the one who's like relentlessly chipper and kind of trying to keep everyone focused on better things. She looks at JCVD like this family member would look at you, and she goes, "I'm going to have a cup of coffee. What about you? What about you, Luke? Would you like a drink?" And he goes, yeah, I have an orange juice, I suppose. And waitress goes off to get the orange juice. Meanwhile, an old man, just an ordinary, boring, have his waffles old man, is walking along. Luke looks at him out the corner of his eye in slow motion and pounds him to butter. Just like absolutely flips out. Post-traumatic, like, kablam, 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 high kick, splits cop, like, whack, smow, karate chops him in the neck, wipes the floor with him. He's bleeding everywhere. He's crawling along. He's just an old man. The psychiatrist is being like, no, Luke, your orange juice is on the way. And he stops, realizes what he's done, panics, and they flee.
Yeah. He then goes home, sits on his big sofa,
and experiences... what I would like to describe as a moment of tenderness.
Yes!
Now, that sounds like a masturbation euphemism, but it is not. It is Luke Davereau's moment of tenderness from Universal Soldier 5 Regeneration. He just falls asleep in front of the sofa watching a documentary about monkeys.
That sounds like a masturbation thing to me.
Boo! Hello! That's it. I just like the idea of him, like, after all he's seen and done, he's like, what's he going to do?
Put the Nature Channel on.
I just like to watch the monkeys groom each other. And it's not even that. It's not that he's watching it. It's just that he fell asleep watching it, I think.
I like it. That's the only way he can fall asleep.
Has to be the monkey channel.
Yeah. And then basically the government come in and snatch him up and take him over to Russia because they're like, everyone else is dead, Luke. We've got to send you in. They then spend 20 minutes just putting him on like a treadmill with various like generals and scientists being like, this isn't going to work. And they're like, well, what else can we do? And it's like, I don't know. We better send him in. Give him another 5 minutes on that treadmill, though.
That will make all the difference.
And then he goes in, kills like all of the Russian terrorists. Pretty sharpish. There's a really awesome like. So, Todd, you said this is a very shooty man kind of film series, and it is. But this one is also a very knifey man.
Stabby, stabby.
Stabby, stabby. And we get like a very long corridor fight scene where Luke Davereau is just stabbing the shit out of everyone.
And it is rad.
Mm. Like, you don't get a lot of JCVD in this film, or Dolph, but the bits you get...
And this... stab corridor scene where he's just walking down a corridor past a series of doors where people jump out so that he can stab them one at a time, ends with the only gag of the film.
It's a good gag.
It's quite a good gag. It ends with, there's, you get one gag in this film, but they make it count. He gets to the end of the corridor. There's one more bad guy there. Bad guy turns around. He's ready to fight him. He looks at Jean-Claude. He just stops. He looks at Jean-Claude and he's, Jean-Claude's got a mean face. He's like, his eyes are drooping.
Mm.
He's ridiculously weathered looking.
Yeah.
He's got this mean face, doesn't blink, looks at him, and the bad guy does some introspection, comes to a decision, turns around, jumps out the window, falls to his death.
Yeah, rather than fight JCVD with his rad little stabber. That's good. Then
he made the right choice.
He did make the right choice. It was a giggle. And then we get JCVD versus Dolph again. And this is the point where you go, like, this film has been so far removed from the original Universal Soldier that the director just really obviously, it's like, I just really want to see those guys on film again. I don't really feel like I need, like, who was it who watched the original Universal Soldier? Like, you know what? I like this, but I want to make a sequel, but I want to make it bleak as fuck. Anyway, we get this fight and it is great. There's like a lot of hand-to-hand combat. There's been throwing each other through walls. There's a bit where Dolph just kicks a wall down because he's such a fucking man mountain. They're punching and kicking and stabbing. And then they fly out of a window in this big building. They land in the rubble and like Dolph's going to kill JCVD. And it almost seems like they don't remember each other. They're just fighting each other out of some primal kind of like, I feel I should fight you. Like there's not that personal animosity from the first film.
It's what the audience wants.
Yes, damn it. Fight, 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 monkeys, fight. And then JCVD picks up a lead pipe and slams it straight into Dolph Lundgren's forehead.
So point first, he doesn't hit it like sideways like you would hit someone in the head with a baseball bat.
It is in his head, like lodged in his head.
He used it like a knife or something. It goes like straight in. It's hilarious.
And Dolph Lundgren is like, I meant to tell you something. Like, he's still got this like emotion that he can't get out. I still got the feels for Dolph Lundgren in this.
But then what's the capper on the scene, Tom?
Oh, then JCVD picks up a shotgun, sticks it in the hole in the lead pipe, and blows the back of Dolph Lundgren's head off.
Yeah, so he basically inserts the shotgun inside Dolph's brain. Yeah. So it like puts it all the way down the pipe so it's in the brain, and then shoots his head open from the inside out.
And at that point, we're like, thank you, film. Yep. It was worth it. Job done. Oh, fuck, Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide, he's still alive. He runs out with his little arm sword.
Two-dimensional face.
Yeah, like he comes out and like fights JCVD a bit. We're kind of like, oh fuck, we forgot about him. We forgot about the kidnapped kids. We forgot about the bomb in Chernobyl. That all gets dealt with. Jean-Claude Van Damme like disarms the bomb and blows up Mr. Worldwide. And then he's like, he's got the kids. And he just like runs off into the distance.
He leaves the kids there.
He runs off, which I thought was actually just like, wasn't actually in the script. It's actually just like Jean-Claude Van Damme, like the alarm goes on his wristwatch and he's kind of like, yeah, if you want me anymore, it's like $3,000 an hour. Bye. And then he's out of there. His ass is grass. He does not want to be there. He's just like, I'm done. Like, film him running away. We'll cut around this. And that's it, apart from we see some scientists back in America and they've rebooted the Unisol program again with lots of clones of Johnny Hothead.
A guy that was a human in this film.
Like, he got killed by Mr. Worldwide.
He got killed, but he wasn't a Unisol. He was like just a regular Joe. They've resurrected, they've cloned, and they've got like 8 or 9 of him.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's a wrap on the movie.
So now, back to my earlier thing. What was the point in this film? Because who was the hero? Who were we meant to root for? Because I know it had Luke Davereau in it, but he's in it so little and has no character arc.
That's a very good point.
It's just like this. It's a made for DVD movie where like stuff happens and you go, yeah, okay, cool. But you haven't gone to see it at the cinema, so you don't like question it as much. I feel like if anyone, like the person with like the most emotional depth in this is Dolph Lundgren's character.
Yeah,
and he's a baddie who is in it hardly at all and has no motivation for turning on that bomb, other than you can just imagine that he's traumatized. It's stuff happens, and there's some cool stuff. There's a load of stabbing, but what was going on?
Is
you know
like
what I mean?
Just a nihilist action movie.
Yes, it is. It's like nothing matters. Who cares? Where is the hero? There is no hero, Todd.
Oh my God. Your
big bag of boobs.
Whoa, easy with the language.
Yeah, but it was cool. Like, it's just so different.
Yeah, it was.
Been all over the shop with this franchise.
I'll tell you what, we are a long way from home with this one. From where we started, we are a long way from home.
Well, as we settle into the end of the podcast, should we go back to home?
Oh, please take
with a little bit of story time.
Yay!
I'm going to read from Universal Soldier, the novelization of the first film, a novel by Robert Tyne based on the screenplay by Dean Devlin.
Hit me, brother. I want to hear the gospel. Testify.
Okay, so this little excerpt right here is from the second tangle that Luke has with the Unisols in the petrol station, where like this is just after he's like cut that like tracker out of his bum, and he's blown up a load of the Universal soldiers, right? And we're going to pick up with some of the scientists inside the Unisol van. Okay, so sit back, enjoy a little bit of story time with Dominic D. Woodward and Garth were frantically spraying coolant over two of the Unisols while Perry yanked another from the flames. Their voices were loud and clear in the speakers that were scattered around the room. "We're gonna lose at least two of them," yelled Garth. "They're burned bad." The body at his feet was revolting to look at. The skin had been flayed off the bone by the flames, and singed organs were oozing through the skeleton. "At 40 million bucks apiece, we can't afford to lose any of them," screamed Colonel Perry. "Use more of the goddamn coolant." Veronica was transfixed. "40 million bucks apiece," she whispered in amazement. Luke grabbed her roughly by the shoulders. "We have to get out of here." Veronica couldn't agree more. "Right." They all but fell out of the truck and escaped in a pool of black smoke, scurrying over the Chevy. Luke slid in behind the wheel, clamped the seatbelt across the chest, and then looked at Veronica like a stern parent. "Right," she said. I know, buckle up for safety." She clicked the belt into place and he peeled out, zooming down the road to safety, or so she thought. The instant the car hit high speed, Andrew Scott, hidden, coiled in the back seat, reared like a wild beast and struck. He looped a rope around Luke's neck and leaned back, trying to choke the life out of his adversary. The taut cord cut into Luke's windpipe and artery. Keeping one hand on the wheel, he scratched the noose with the other, trying to claw himself free of the deadly snare. His nails raked his throat, lacerating the skin, but he couldn't tear himself free. When Scott pounced, Veronica had screamed and recoiled in fear. Then, realizing that she was the only person in the car capable of freeing her companion, she struck back, her fingers curved like talons. Her fingernails tore into his face, carving long, bloody tracks on his cheeks. Scott hardly reacted at all, bearing down on his principal adversary. There would be plenty of time to deal with the woman when he had strangled Luke. "You can't run from me this time," Scott growled through gritted teeth. "Traitor." We'll have a little bit more story time on next episode.
Oh, well done. I enjoyed that.
It's a bit gnar, isn't it?
That
gnar,
was visceral.
Yeah.
That was gnar, bruh.
That's where you get some of that really descriptive writing. The talons and the organs oozing through.
Oozing.
That was especially selected for you, my horror-loving friend.
Oh, and I appreciated it. That was good. That's like really brings something to the story that was absent from that film, I think. Like the first one. It wasn't like that.
Mm.
It wasn't that in your face.
It also brings a different number in, because I think in like Universal Soldier 2 and 3, we were thinking that Universal Soldiers cost like 2.5 mil.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas this is like 40 mil. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
40 mil, not well spent.
Well, don't forget the Universal Soldier 4 was 45 mil to make the whole movie.
Yeah.
So that's more than one of those Universal Soldiers would cost you.
God damn.
You'd get a bunch of them for the price of of the Universal Soldier 5.
Yeah, fucking hell. Wow.
That's a cool story. Well, thank you for sharing it. I am now super excited for the next movie of the series, which will be The Bitter End.
Yeah, Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning.
Wow.
I'm excited. It's directed by the same guy who did this, so I think bleak times are ahead of us. Apparently Dolph is still in it. So I'm just imagining another clone.
I mean, once you bring one in, you can always crack another one out.
Gotta have him.
Or I'm worried he's going to pop up in, like, a flashback. You know?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
What do you want to see?
I really don't know, because this franchise has been so all over the place. And, like, it's never, like, got up and running, because this is, like, the next film we're going to watch is going to be the last in the series. And that will be the third film, the second sequel that is canonical. So I still don't feel like I've had like a real crack at actually understanding what this franchise is all about, because it's been so disparate, you know, like it's different takes on the same principle.
At the same time, I don't feel as if any of them have really contradicted each other that much.
No, no.
There's no reason I can think that the non-canonical ones shouldn't be canon.
Oh, no, I'm sure you could definitely write around all of that. I'm sure you could tie them all together.
They just didn't.
It's just, it's a weird one. So I have no idea. I'm just happy to have a little bit more Dolph. You know, like a JCVD hasn't done the splits yet. I mean, I doubt he's going to do it at that late point in his career, but it'd be nice.
No, I want to see. I want to see more monkeys.
More monkeys.
Yeah, we had Luke cuddling a cuddly toy monkey. We've had JCVD falling asleep in front of the monkeys. There's obviously something monkey going on with this character that they're trying to tell us. And I'm hoping that that story arc is going to kind of reach its apex in the finale.
There's been subtle undertones of monkey.
Yeah, they're going to reveal what the monkey's all about.
Do you think that we'll get a Universal Soldier / Planet of the Apes crossover at any point?
Well, I think it's inevitable.
Yeah. Where Andy Serkis will do motion capture as Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, I would imagine he'll be every character.
But on the flip side, Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren will put on prosthetics to play monkeys. They'll just flip it. They'll do like practical effects monkeys, CGI real people, everyone played by Andy Serkis apart from those two monkeys.
This is going to blow minds.
I think so. Can we get Pitbull in there?
What, are you talking Mr. Worldwide?
Mr. Worldwide. I want him in there as well.
I'm sure.
And Boo Boo and Burt Reynolds. It's going to be a big... It's going to be a real nod to the Universal Soldier fans who've watched all of them.
Do you know what? It's not been that many films, but I already feel quite emotional about the fact that we're about to get to the end of it.
Yeah, because it's just... You've not been able to guess what was going to happen next. You've got to give it that. So that'll be next week.
Thank you for listening. Yeah. As always, we really, really appreciate you guys coming along for this. So do tune in next week for the bitter end of season... Gosh, what are we now? Season four.
Season five coming up.
Don't forget that you can take part in our poll to vote for what you would like us to cover for season five. It's not too late. If you're hearing this within a week of it broadcasting, you can still vote. If you go to our Twitter page at Bitter End Pod or our Facebook page at Bitter End Pod, you don't need to log in for either of those. Just find our page, scroll to the top. There'll be a pinned post with a link to the poll. A lot of you guys have been voting already, been telling us what you think, giving us just a little bit of feedback, which is all super useful. It's really interesting seeing those results come in, and extra fun because I have been looking at the results. I've not let Tom see them. So
I have no idea what is the front runner. So the options are Nightmare on Elm Street, if you want to go big Wes Craven-y horror. Fast and the Furious, if you want to do drivey man action. And also Air Bud, the Disney live action sports playing dog franchise, which then splits off into Air Buds, which is all about a load of puppies that eventually go into space. What do you want us to watch? You let us know, you big bag of spannery bums.
Exactly. Tom, very well put. If you've listened to the podcast this far, you haven't voted, it's not too late. It'll take you all of a minute, and you can be a part of history.
It'll take you less time to do it than it has been for us to explain it.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Until then, thank you for listening. I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. Well, you got a good swear to end on?
Yeah, I do, you big minge.